Hello and welcome to The Dot Ball. This is a cricket podcast which is focused on South African cricket mostly, but we will touch on the global game as well. My colleague Andrew Sampson is not with us in person today. He's in the Free State of all places, but he has sent us some statistical gems from the first test between South Africa and the West Indies at St. Lucia. Of course, the Proteas registering an overwhelming innings victory there over the West Indies. John Kent, it's a great pleasure to have the former Proteas and KZN Dolphins all-rounder with us again. And as befits, I think, a podcast called The Dot Ball, we're very happy and privileged to have Paul Harris, the former Proteas spinner, with us today. Paul played 37 tests for South Africa and took 103 wickets, which puts him 16th on the list of all-time South African wicket-takers, and he's the fourth-best spinner. But I think the stat that perhaps displays Paul Harris's career best is that when he played for South Africa between 2007 and 2010, they played in 15 series, and they only lost once. That was when Australia beat them here in South Africa in 2009. And Harrow's left arm spin, bowling plenty and plenty of dot balls, was a major reason for their success, just the pressure he built at the other end. So a very big welcome to you, Paul, and to you, John.
Cheers. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Ken.
Yeah, so obviously I think we were all very delighted with how the first test went in St. Lucia. The Proteas winning for the first time overseas since 2017 in England. So it's been a long time between drinks. John, what were your takeaways from that test match?
Yeah, I think to sum it up, I suppose our Dean Elgar captain a win in his very first game. Obviously not memorable in other aspects, but obviously a great start for him for his captaincy, as well as two debutants with Keegan Peterson and Verena coming into the team. I also think obviously batting once is obviously always a wonderful thing in Test cricket, and obviously our fast bowling attack as well was pretty special. I was, to be fair, taking nothing away from our fast bowling battery of bowlers, I was a little bit disappointed with some of the batting from that West Indies top order.
Yeah, John, I must say that I was kind of hoping that the West Indian batting had improved since we last played against them. But Paul Harris, you'll obviously remember locking horns with the West Indies. How did you see that first test?
Yeah, I suppose I think I heard Bachi getting interviewed afterwards, and they said it was close to the perfect test match. And I think that was a fair sort of reflection on it. It was always going to be the sort of battle of the top orders. Both teams have got decent seam attacks. In seam bowling friendly conditions, we've got to say, I mean, that wicket did do quite a bit. It was probably very similar to what you'd sort of get up country here, either in Pretoria or Johannesburg. It had quite a bit in it, and it had quite nice bounce and carry. So you'd have to say suited the way that, the sort of style of cricket that South Africans like to play. But having said that, I was very impressed with the way, our guys went about it with the bat. Obviously, Quinny getting runs always helps the cause. I think you'll be very careful with Quinton de Kock. People say, that he's a bit too dashing and he goes at it too hard. I thought this innings he sort of paced it really well. He took his time in the beginning and then sort of smacked it towards the end when he was batting with the tail. So, hopefully, Quinton de Kock in form completely changes the look of that South African side. So, certainly a brilliant effort from them and a result that was much needed.
Yeah, I loved the way Quinton played, and you said it, Paul. I mean, he came in, and on that second morning, he got away quickly. The West Indies were a bit loose up front, but then I was really impressed with the way in that hour before lunch when the West Indies bowlers really tightened up a bit, and it was tough going, that he dug in a bit. He actually just made sure he stayed there. And then obviously later on, batting so well with the tail.
I think it's a double-edged sword with Quinton. I mean, you don't want him to go too, you know, his nature is to score quickly. And you sort of want to keep that. That's what makes him special. That's what makes him an X-factor player. So it's a sort of fine line that he's got to find in his batting with tempo. I think he found it. There was a period of pressure there to soak in. And that's Test cricket. There's going to be times when bowlers are going to bowl well in bowler-friendly conditions. And you're going to have to sort of test your defensive technique and find a way to stay there. And then, obviously, we all know what he can do once he gets into that attacking mode. I actually think it helped him that we lost a few wickets and he was batting with the tail. It freed him up. And he could just say, okay, well, let's throw caution to the wind here and play a few shots. And it came off for him. So, as I mentioned before, a Quinton de Kock in form completely changes the look and the feel of that South African side.
John, you would have batted with the tail quite a lot during your career. How impressed were you with the way Quinny went about that and just your impressions of his innings as a whole?
I think the elements where he showed a bit of application and building in innings and the different sort of peaks and troughs you go through during the course of innings, Paul brought it up so well there, saying how, this is so important to him playing his natural game at some point in his innings, and towards the back end of the innings, the field was spread. He was hitting boundaries at will, and obviously it was a wonderful spectacle to watch. But obviously, batting with a tail, you've got to be clever about it. He had Milder behind him, who's a very good all-round player, and then obviously the tail, the fast bowlers and spinner to come. So he dealt well with that sort of responsibility with managing and rotating strike and trying to dominate the strike rate, facing a lot of the bowling. But obviously a strike rate of 83 during the course of the innings, he doesn't normally face 170 balls in an innings, to be fair. And generally when he's in there, that game moves forward at a rapid rate.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the number of balls he faced, John, because we have a very interesting little insert now from Andrew Sampson, which focuses exactly on that.
It was good to see South Africa in the Caribbean playing Test cricket after a long break. The last series there was back in 2010. Jacob Zuma had been South African president for 1 year back then, and Barack Obama wasn't yet halfway through his first term. The IPL was just over 2 years old, and Quinton de Kock was 17 and had played just one first-class match at the time. 11 years is a very long gap between Tests and the West Indies. The only series in that time in South Africa was over 6 years ago as well. Speaking of Quinton de Kock, it was very good to see him in the runs again. We know he hasn't been in great form lately. His 141 not out was comfortably more than he had made in his last seven Test innings combined. More importantly, it was good to see him smiling again. I don't keep smiles per Test stats, but it feels like quite a while since we've seen one from him. What pleased me most was how long he batted. His Test career batting average going into this match was 37.13, and yet we all know that he's clearly the standout batting talent in South Africa at the moment, and should probably be averaging around 47 in Test cricket, not 37. A couple of months ago, I wrote an article about him in which I postulated that a reason for this could be that he hasn't played enough long innings. He faced 170 balls for his 141 not out, which is the third longest innings he's played in his professional career, and the longest since 2012, which was before he turned 20. It was just the fifth time in 503 professional innings, across formats as they say these days, that he'd faced 150 balls. It is difficult to maintain a high average in Test cricket if you aren't playing long innings fairly regularly. So let's have a look at a bit of a comparison. I mean, of the 59 players who've had 500 plus innings since Quinton de Kock made his debut, only seven have had 150 ball innings as few as five times. The other six in that list, Chris Gayle, Glenn Maxwell, Kyron Pollard, David Miller, Jason Roy, and Paul Sterling. You may have noticed a bit of a similarity between those names. They spent most of their time swinging through the line at a white ball. And you don't have to bat long in short games. De Kock is the only one of them who has been a Test regular in that time. He's played 52 Tests in total, compared to 36 that the other six on that list have played combined. Overall in his career, De Kock has played 138 innings in first-class cricket and 365 in the short formats, which is nearly three-quarters of his innings facing the white ball. So I don't know how you develop the muscle memory to play long innings if that's what you're doing all the time. It's interesting to compare him with Kyle Verena, who will be his likely replacement if he weren't available in the test team. Verena has spent far longer in the apprenticeship of franchise cricket, and de Kock was raced into the international team pretty early in his career. And Verena has played 128 professional innings across formats, of which 11 have been 150 or more balls. So he's one in 11 and a half innings. Is he playing a substantially long innings compared to de Kock's one in 100, which suggests that Verena will be better prepared and better equipped to play long innings in test cricket. So for me, the balls faced by Quinton de Kock, 170, was the number of the test match, the stat of the test match, and is far more important than the actual runs that he scored. Of course, it doesn't help that it'll be 6 months after the second test before he gets the chance to play another first-class innings, presumably in the Boxing Day test.
Yeah, so I particularly like when Andrew mentioned there how great it was to see Quinny de Kock smiling again, because he's obviously been through a very tough time. And let's not forget the person behind the genius when it comes to batting. Guys, just your view on those stats that seem to suggest that Quinny maybe should try and be bat longer in test cricket, or do you think that's going to take away from the qualities that he brings?
Look, I think it's, as I mentioned before, it's a double-edged sword. I think you want to find the perfect Quinton de Kock tempo with whatever that is, you'll know in his innings. If it's, sometimes attack is the best form of defense, depending on what position you're in. Form accounts for a huge part of how you can play. He's clearly in form now, so he can, sort of play a few more shots, and he's obviously a bit more comfortable with his defensive technique as well. So, form plays a big role. When you're out of form, no matter what you try, sometimes it can just sort of go awry. You try and occupy the crease, you get a good one, you nick it, you get caught. Good catch here, unlucky dismissal there. But when you're in form, it tends to go for you. So it's easy to sort of say you should do it one way, not the other. I would like to see Quinton be a bit more maybe circumspect in the beginning of his innings. And then sort of once he's faced his 30 balls and he's in, then he can sort of unleash. But I certainly don't want to see him lose that flair.
John, anything to add?
Yeah, I think maybe something is slightly a bit different looking at it. I think the preparation as a team, the teams these days with such short turnarounds and isolation periods, things like that, it must be quite tough to get yourself up to speed and start a series on the front foot. And I think obviously you've got to give some credit to the coaching staff, Boucher and the rest of the guys, just in terms of getting the bowlers hitting their straps, hitting the tone in the test match, bowling so brilliantly to start, knocking over the opposition for such a low first innings total. That is really excellent. And the batsmen, obviously a couple missed out, unfortunately, but they got in, they batted once, they batted big. And like we said, you couldn't have asked for a better start.
Yeah, I thought the bowlers were absolutely superb. Sure, the pitch was very helpful, but I think it's easy to get carried away on pitches like that. And I just thought their discipline was so good. They just stuck to that channel just outside off stump, really squeezed the West Indies batsmen and forced mistakes. Paul, did it remind you a bit about when you were playing and it was the kind of strategy that you guys employed so successfully?
Yeah, look, I mean, it helps when you've got pace in your side. I think that's one of the advantages of this African bowling lineup. I think Andrich Nukia has been a breath of fresh air. Also gives, takes a bit of pressure off Rabada. You got two guys that can bowl 145 plus, with Nokia, tapping the 150s. That certainly helps. It reminds you of sort of when Dale and Mornay were at their best. And it instills that fear into the opposition. I thought that Ngidi was also superb. Maybe lost a yard or two in pace, but certainly has made up for it in accuracy. He had the tendency to bowl the odd bad ball here or there. Didn't get it, but in this last test match, he was superb. He didn't let up. And I think as a unit, they bowled well. I thought they were rotated well. It does help when you bowl teams out cheaply, so you can rotate your fast bowlers. They're not going into their third and fourth spells. It'd be interesting to see what wicket gets produced next. I would imagine that it would be slightly flatter. I don't think that they want to take on our fast bowlers again. And I think they realize that they'll be on a bit of a hiding to nothing if they do that. The way they certainly, the way they batted. But certainly Shaul Langerveld and Mark Boucher have done a great job and a great turnaround with that bowling unit in a short space of time. I mean, I don't remember too many bad balls getting bowled in any of the spells that they bowled.
Yeah, Lungi and Ngidi in particular was a bit of a revelation for me, because we know he's had all those injury problems and understandably he's lost a bit of pace. But I really feel like skills-wise, he's come on a tremendous way, and it was fantastic to see that away swinger going. John, do you think he could almost be the kind of replacement for the Philander role in this attack?
I think his variation, obviously, he has all that there, and he has the consistency as well to match it as well. So I think obviously all of them, 6'4", somewhere around there. Philander, slightly different kettle of fish, slightly lower on pace. But Ngidi, gets up into those late 130s. He's got, that area where you wonder when you're going to get a bad ball a lot of the time. I think Norkia might be slightly less disciplined, you could say, but he runs in hard and he knocks guys over. That's his sort of game. And Ngidi, he builds pressure well. He uses the new ball well. We saw he gets some shape both ways, and he couldn't find a better sort of partner for him in Kagiso Rabada as well on the other end, who's got a huge reputation.
Yeah, John, just on the West Indies batting and Paul coming here as well. It's just really disappointing for me. Like, I kind of think, like, back when you guys were playing, we always felt that our bowlers could get the better of the West Indies batsmen, because in terms of technique and discipline, it's like they just can't resist something outside off stump. You just know that if you stick there all day, they're going to nick off. And it really doesn't seem like their batting has progressed much at all. I saw a stat that in terms of the combined totals of their two innings, it was their second worst batting performance at home ever.
Yeah, I think I was particularly surprised how badly they dealt with the ball just on the fourth, fifth stump line. They didn't really leave well. They played at balls outside the line of the eyes very often. I just looked at a guy like Roston Chase a year or two ago. He was coming in at sort of 7 and 8, and he's coming in where now he's coming in at 4. So, yeah, it's Bonner, Shah Hope, he's been around. Brathwaite digs in a lot of the time. Carl Mayer's not really done a huge amount so far. We've got Holder slightly lower down, De Silva, Blackwood, those sort of guys. But they really didn't deal when the ball was doing a little bit. They really did struggle. I was very surprised. Footwork non-existent, to be honest with you. And outside the off stump, it looked like they could nick off at any stage, really.
I think there's an element of fear as well. I honestly do. They didn't play the short ball particularly well. There was a few guys sort of getting out hooking. And I think that's the reason why they're nicking off, is because their footwork is it's sort of in the toilet, to use an old cricket phrase. Is that they're not getting forward, they're not getting they're getting caught in the crease, and that's because I think there's a little bit of fear. I think that they worry about that short ball. I think our fast bowlers used it particularly well. I think that they backed it up with very good areas after that, and then you're going to get the sort of, especially with a bit in the wicket, you're going to get guys nicking off. I think there's a serious problem in that West Indian side with playing the short ball. And if the wicket bounces in the next test match, well, they can expect a bit more of what they got in the first. Sort of that good area, fourth stump, just outside, with the odd short ball in between. And with the discipline that the three fast bowlers showed, it's still going to prove very difficult for them technically to get through it.
Yeah, I think the Proteas probably couldn't have chosen a better pitch for the two tests to be played on than the one at Gros Allais. Paul, I believe when you were with the Titans, there was an award called the TFC, and I imagine the Dolphins might well have had one as well. maybe you can explain that and just chat to us about the recipient and how you felt his first game in permanent charge has gone. He has, of course, captained South Africa twice before in tests.
Sure, it's a bit of a fun award that you give to someone that has done, you know, done nothing during a game. Generally, it's called the TFC Thanks for Coming. It basically means you've done nothing throughout the Test match. And I think Dean Alba is the 14th captain in Test history to win a Test match without taking a catch, scoring a run, or getting a wicket. So, unfortunately, Dina, you qualify for the TFC award for the previous Test, but we'll take it away from you because you did captain very well, I thought, and you won your first Test as captain.
Fantastic. John, did you guys have a TFC at the Dolphins? Can you remember any great cases of it? And what did you think of Dean's leadership?
Yeah, I thought he conducts himself brilliantly as a skipper, really. He's one of the guys who leads from the front in attitude and everything about him. I really enjoy what he brings to the team and to the game of cricket. But, yeah, going back onto the TFC, that was normally in the four-day games that something's going to crop up where you haven't really done a huge amount, and that normally ends in probably a funnel or something like that at the end of play.
John, I know you captained a bit. I hope you never got a TFC, did you?
Yeah, everyone's probably got one of those at some stage, to be fair. But no, I wasn't captain a huge amount from junior days a little bit, but into senior cricket I wasn't used as a captain, Ken?
Guys, going into the second test starting on Friday, we obviously don't know about the fitness of Themba Bavuma, who has a hip injury, but... any changes that you guys would consider?
No, I don't think so. I think that team did so well. I mean, I would imagine if Temba's fit, he would come back in and then someone would need to miss out. You probably find that Verena might miss out then. So that would be the only change that I would see if Themba is fit. And certainly from an experience point of view, it'll bolster our top order. He's the type of guy that maybe on a wicket that is doing a bit is the type of guy you need. You know, he's quite a dogged player. He's got a very good defensive technique. And he can come in and sort of blunt the attack and sort of get them into their third and fourth spells. But I don't foresee too many changes. I don't foresee them bringing in any other sort of bowlers. If those bowlers are all fit, I would imagine they'll all play again. You don't generally change a side that has produced a result like that unless you're forced to. So look, I think... they'll stick with the same 11 unless Temba's fit.
Paul, I was actually going to ask you also, just on going back onto it, about the conditions that were expected. I think we took a lot of spinners in our squads for this trip. There's obviously Prunellan, who did well in the four-day series this year, George Linder, those guys. Do you think we sort of thought it would be very much dust bowl off the top of our head before we went there? We've got enough seamers, we've got enough spinners, of course, but I suppose the conditions weren't exactly as what we were probably expecting.
Maybe not, but also the squad's bigger. It's a 19-man squad, which helps. I mean, then, you generally got 15-man squads, so you got four extra guys. So, it depends. I suppose it depends where you play. This particular week we're playing on now, it does tend to favour the seamers. But I think that they've got a good balance there. I think, maybe taking a guy like Sobhrani with for a bit of experience, the chances of him playing with Shamsi there and with Keshav and George Linder probably not very high. But, giving him a bit of experience, understanding what it's like, if you've got a 19-man squad, why not?
Yeah.
Take guys that have performed, and the spinners this season seem to clean up in South African conditions. They really did well. So it seems like every team out there was bowled out by spinners this season, including a woeful performance from our Titans team. They've done very well. So I thought that, that a 19-man squad, you can cover all your bases, and... I don't foresee them in any of the test matches unless it gets really sort of flat, playing more than one. Yeah. So was it a bit of overkill? Maybe, possibly it was. But, with 19-man squad, you've got sort of that bit of leeway.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys, I must say I really like the balance in the side at the moment with four frontline bowlers, a genuine all-rounder at seven in Vian Morda, and then your six specialist batsmen. And what I like about it is that when we get to conditions that aren't so seamer friendly, then there's not that much disruption. I mean, you can just bring in George Linder for Vian Morda, and I think they are of similar sort of quality as batsmen. And then you've got a second spinner if you need one.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they use Vian Mulder. He wasn't really needed much with the ball in this previous test, obviously, because we our frontline bowlers sort of bowled him out. I do agree with you that I do think that this is a good balanced side, one of the better ones we've had, actually, for a while. I think on flatter wickets, we might get a bit more, obviously, a bit more tested with our bowling lineup. Having said that, we do have pace in there, which I like. You know, if there's a couple, touch wood, hopefully not a couple of injuries, or if they want to do what these, or they like to do in these, in this day and age, and they want to rotate, which I think is ridiculous. You know, if they wanted to rotate me as a player in the old days, they would have had one thing coming. Yeah. So, you know, I don't believe in this whole rotation story. But if they want to do that, then, you know, it might prove to be a bit more difficult without the pace, you know, awesome. I don't think there's anyone in the wings. Maybe Jansen, I'm not sure how quick he is, but maybe he can come in and bowl with a bit of pace. But on flatter wickets, we might get tested a bit more, but certainly do agree with you. I think, especially with Quinton de Kock playing so well, and maybe Themba Bavuma coming in there to add a bit of stability, I think that's a decent top six with an all-rounder and a good bowling lineup.
Mm. Paul, do you feel that Keshav Maharaj and George Linder, they're both left-arm spinners, but do you feel there's sufficient difference between the two that they can both play in an 11?
I think that where George adds a bit of value, certainly, first of all, he's had an unbelievable last three or four seasons. He's a bloody good cricketer. Where he adds value is if there is a bit of assistance for the spinners, I think what they'll do is they'll rotate Mulder and him. So he can play as the all-rounder. And then you've got two spinners. It's not ideal that you've got two left-arm spinners, but they are different in their own ways. But certainly as an all-rounder option, he will. If there is a bit in it for the spinners, then you don't need four seamers. Then you can sort of bring him in for Vian Mulder. But I think out and out against Kesh, I think Kesh still has the upper hand as the out and out spinner. I like the way this season they went to sort of toe to toe. When George got 5-for, then Kesh would get 6-for. When Kesh got 6-for, then George would get 7-for. So it kind of puts pressure on Kesh to perform. And that's what you want. You want guys to be performing, and you want sort of those spots not to be, you don't want Kesh as he has. I think he had for too long, that he had sort of monopoly over that position. Whereas now, he's really got to perform and he's got to keep his game in check. Otherwise, he'll lose his spot.
For sure, Paul. And in this coming domestic season, it's going to be really interesting because we've seen the rise of Penelin Sabran, Senner and Mutisami's done really well, and Simon Harmer's going to be back in our local game as well. So plenty of competition there. John, just another aspect of the makeup of the Proteas team at the moment was the debutant coming in at number three, Keegan Peterson. I thought he looked pretty good. Not a bad first effort by him. How did you rate his performance?
Yeah, I think he started nicely. A couple of boundaries. Obviously, he's been through Western Province. He's gone to the Knights. He's been averaging 50 for most domestic seasons for some time now. So there has been some calls for him to be in the side at earlier stages, much like Varane. I would say there's obviously a big support for him coming through domestically and doing so well. But Keegan Peterson, he's done the right thing. He's got weight of runs in domestic cricket. And he's also got a knack of getting big hundreds when he gets in as well, which is great to see. So I think he is going to get a fair run going forward now. And you know what I mean? It's good to see guys aren't, they put in the hard work. They put in those seasons where, sometimes you think no one's watching. But, when you put the big numbers on season after season, that holds great value when you come to this level now, mentally and technically. All those aspects get examined. And, he's getting around the 30 mark. So, that's a great age to come through and do superbly well. And I see him doing very nicely.
Yeah, great. Well, I think we're all very excited for that second test to start with the Proteas playing so well in the first game. John, Paul, thanks so much for your wonderful inputs. It's been fantastic talking cricket with you guys. And hopefully we'll be back together talking about the game again in the near future.
Thanks very much for having us.
Thank you, Ken. Cheers, guys.
And thank you, our listener, for listening to this episode of The Dot Ball. Don't forget to like and subscribe to this channel, and then you can also get notifications of our podcasts, and we'll be back after the second test concludes. And in case you want to get hold of us, you can contact me on my Twitter account, which is at Ken Borland. That's K-E-N-B-O-R-L-A-N-D. Thanks very much, and goodbye.